Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello. Hello!
I'm Trish Halpin.
And I'm Lorraine Candy.
Welcome to Postcards from Midlife, the show where we help you through the midlife, the menopause.
Is that frightening, Trish?
Oh, no, God. The M word.
The M word, yeah.
And everything related. And also mental health, growing up, getting older, having a second act. That's another thing I hear a lot at the moment.
Kind of all the fabulous stuff, but kind of some of the stressy stuff too. So we're going to be getting to the bottom of a lot of
divorce,
issues.
Parenting, hormonal teenagers, that kind of thing.
But we've also got some fantastic experts coming on to chat about some of these things with us. And who do we have today, Lorraine?
Today we have Susie Godson, who I absolutely love because she's so extremely entertaining. But Susie is the Times sex and relationship correspondent. She has a column every week. She's also written books on sex. She's really good on parenting teens, and she's very, very helpful and practical around the issue of sex. And that's one of the things that I don't know about you, but I find myself talking about a lot with my midlife friends. Sex in marriage, sex outside of marriage, friends of mine who are having all sorts of new sex after divorce, which is highly irritating to hear about.
Old sex, new sex.
Yes, everything
sex.
To do with sex. Yeah. And why your whole body changes, how hormones affects your sexuality, and the kind of sexuality and the kind of sex you have. And Susie's going to tell us what's going on.
Can't wait to hear. But first, I want to talk to you about my holiday, or should I say my retreat that I've just been on.
Fire away, Trish.
Oh, God, it was so fabulous. It's the first time in more than 15 years that I've been away on my own without children and without husband.
Let's not forget you had twins.
I know, exactly.
So slightly more traumatic than everyone else.
I deserve extra credit for that, don't I? It was one of these proper wellness retreats. And I have come back like a new woman. I feel completely zen.
That's very annoying for everyone else around you, isn't it?
I just felt it was about time. I feel like maybe I've spent the last 15 years of my life completely overwhelmed at most points of any day. You know, that kind of your brain is just constantly on, you're physically doing stuff all the
time.
Manic
and full of cortisol.
Exactly. And it's even that thing of, I just don't know how to relax, I don't know how to rest. And actually I found out on my retreat through a very wise man called Rajesh, who was telling me that basically, obviously we're all so resilient, we can just keep going at 100 miles an hour.
I quite like that. Yeah.
So he described it as being purposefully restless. So, like, even when I've got like 10 minutes to myself, you probably do this.
We're all busy.
I can't sit down. I'd better read something. I'd better read a newspaper, read a book, look up a recipe, watch something on TV. It's that idea of you're just cramming your brain all the time. And my big revelation from this retreat is that I might spend all this time like going to the gym and doing yoga and trying to kind of keep the old body in working order, but I'm not doing anything for my mind. And I am now going to be doing things for my mind.
Will you be meditating?
I will be meditating.
That frightens me.
Does it? What frightens you about it?
Well, being on my own, for a start.
Oh, really? What, lying on the floor?
I've tried meditating. I've had people come to my house to teach me. I've done it in my yoga classes, and I can't do it. And I find it makes me absolutely furious.
Oh, I think I'm quite receptive to it. Maybe you're sort of not at that.
No.
So I know you've only just started doing yoga in the last sort of year or so. Well, I've been at it for about 20 years now, so I'm quite open to all of that sort of stuff.
Did you break habits? Is that what you did on your retreat?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was one of my things that, again, I kind of went into it not really knowing what I was going to be doing, other than hoping I'd come back feeling pretty fabulous, which
tired.
I did. Less tired, waking up feeling great. You know, we all have to have habits in our life.
They become unconscious.
They
so
do.
The way we start our day,
yeah.
We never review the way we start our day.
Yeah.
We never review how we go to bed. We never review how tired we are during the day. Just taking 10 minutes out at lunchtime to walk around the building
that's a good
started
habit.
Doing that.
Have you?
That's
a really good habit. And I think it's this idea of we need habits in order to make to function. We have to have habits, otherwise we would go insane.
But I think they become looking, structures
they
that
do,
trap you.
And it's just kind of asking yourself, how does this serve me? You know, what am I doing? And you're just on autopilot. So every afternoon I have a cup of tea and a big slab of chocolate. How is that serving me?
I always think that manic thing at the weekends when you start doing all the washing, piling everything up. Do I have to do it that way? Could I incorporate this during the week so it doesn't feel like it's quite such a giant task on a Saturday morning?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
But that's you being purposefully restless, isn't it? It's like you've you've got this time that you could be doing something actually to rest and relax, reset, rejuvenate.
Watching Come Dine With Me.
Well, I'm not sure that counts. But yes, you could be, but that's your mind going again.
Are you asking me to sit quietly with my own thoughts somewhere?
Well, I agree.
Look, I can't even go to the toilet on my own at home. Because
oh, really?
Of the
there's a child or a dog
had.
Or
yeah,
something. Yeah, I get that. A cat. Cat normally comes with me.
Well, cats are evil. So
which is quite annoying. But yes, I think it's a real art to be able to actually just sit still. Just to be still.
But you have to find time, don't you? And finding time is what is quite difficult when you get to a stage in your life where your children are consistently asking things. You know, mine are 17 and 7, so between the four of them there is always time, something they need. And it's very rare for me to be able to sit on my own. And then when I come to work, everybody has
everybody's
a question.
Everybody's at me. That's what I think all the time.
That's why I do my open water swimming, because you've got to get in the lake with me to be at me for that.
Yeah.
And
that's
breathing. Yeah, I love it. It's changed my life.
And when you're saying like, oh, I don't have time to do any of these things. When do you find time to do that?
Well, I get up quite early.
Right.
Yeah.
How early?
I'm a 6 a.m. riser, but then again, you know, sleep eludes us slightly as we get older. And I try and build it in to the one very regular time I do on a Monday morning. That's when I do it. But you have to make that a new habit, and you stop doing something else perhaps that...
Rowing with your children on a Monday morning, that's a good thing to stop doing.
Yes, yeah. Throwing them out the door saying, I never want to see you again.
Yes.
So welcome, Susie Godson, who answers questions about sex all day, all week long. And you've also written this brilliant book called The Sex Book, which is quite graphic, but it's really helpful and really useful. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask about for women of the age group we're talking to, so it's kind of over 40, is libido. Where does it go? Where's mine gone? Who's got it?
I think you've got it.
Oh.
You know, as we get older and we're in long-term relationships, it's not so much about libido. I think it's very easy to kind of say that, you know, changes or whatever affect libido. But actually, if you think about your life and your lifestyle and your relationship with your partner, that's where your libido has gone. You're too busy. You're
tired.
Looking after your kids. You're knackered. And when you go on holiday, I bet you have more sex.
I think we probably do have more sex on holiday, but then there's a giant, enormous expectation around it because it's gone from your daily life. So we were talking about this, Trish, weren't we, the other day? It's just really, it's really tricky when you, I mean, I've been married nearly 20 years and when we first met, all we did was have sex. I mean, I was really worried that that's all we would ever have, that it would be a disaster. And now we don't so much.
Yeah.
So we were saying, weren't we, that it's kind of male expectation, female expectation.
I think it's about, does it mismatched libido.
I was having a conversation with two gay friends the other night, and all they talk about is sex, and all they do is have sex. Whereas if you talk to friends who are lesbians, it's less important. And there are definitely differences between men and women. And actually, if you look at, you know, lesbian and gay people, it is more noticeable. However, there's more difference between, you know, if you get a group of 100 women together, there's more difference between that group of women than there is between a group of 100 women and a group of 100 men. So individual differences play a huge part. So you can't really generalize, but, you know, all the research does show that women are less interested in, you know, sex, and possibly because it's an easier process for men to get pleasure from sex.
Yes.
I mean, it takes 2 minutes and, you know,
yes.
Whereas it takes longer for women to get there, and it's a cognitive process. You have to get engaged in it. And actually the way in for women is through connection, through
intimacy,
romance, attention, engagement, conversation, focus. And that's why it happens more when you're relaxed, when you're on holiday, because you have that time to attend to each other. Women can't go from cold to hot in 20 seconds.
No, I mean, you can't go from talking about helping revise for exams to
exactly
hot, corny sex, can
exactly
you?
No. Exactly. And you know, none of us are very good at creating the space for it. And by space, I mean, you know, if you look at your surroundings, you know, there's a place for you to eat, there's a place to watch TV, there's a place for your kids to study.
There's no sex room.
There isn't.
Or let's get a sex room.
No, the bedroom is definitely for sleep, isn't
yeah,
it?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. There's a place to go to sleep. Mm. But where does sex fit into all of it? We don't prioritise it. Mm. And
that is very interesting. Because it doesn't have to be a bedroom, does it?
You just assume
it should be.
Absolutely not. So, and I mean, I guess it depends on how much importance you place on it. But because of my job, I really place a huge amount of importance on it, because to me it's about the connection between me and my husband.
If we otherwise are, you're friends, aren't you?
It's also that, but otherwise we're mostly arguing.
Yes. It's good for resolving.
Well, if we don't
pent up anger and tension.
If we're really bickering and then we have sex, suddenly we're not bickering anymore. Oh. It has an absolutely seismic impact on mood, on the way you relate to each other. It's actually transformative.
I think men get kind of pent up and they can't necessarily express. We were talking about the funny kind of...
We were, yes.
The ways that they try and communicate to you that
some
they want
husbands,
sex without actually saying they
not
want
mine,
sex.
Obviously I would never say it out loud. Becomes a bit carry on if he hasn't had sex. You know, he's a bit, woo-hoo! And every time I bend over to get something out of a drawer, it's a bit like living with Benny Hill. It's ridiculous. And then Trish says, have sex with him.
Yeah, I said, he needs sex. He wants to have sex with you.
Yes, that's what he wants. He's trying to tell you in a clumsy way.
But in a weird way, the having sex, not having sex is a form of communication, and it's a bid for attention or a bid to push someone away. Is actually you not wanting it is also a form of communication.
Yes.
Because you're saying you're not meeting my needs, and until you meet my needs, I'm not going to give you what you want. And actually couples do that the whole time. It's a kind of choreographed dance.
It's a cycle
that replaces talking.
Mm. Oh, that's a bit depressing, isn't it?
So there's no real physical reason with dropping hormones, anything like that, that should stop you wanting to have sex or having sex or orgasming?
I think, actually, weirdly, in midlife, sometimes female hormones drop and in correspondence, the amount of testosterone a woman has increases proportionately, and actually women can be more interested in having sex. And you'll see that...
Just not with their husbands, maybe.
That's exactly right. Women who divorce in
younger
midlife...
Men, different men.
...who had zero interest in having sex with their husbands.
Mad for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I think it's very easy to try and look for a biological explanation, but the answer...
Just tick that off the list. Yeah. Trish, it's not an excuse. So if you want to have sex and you haven't had sex for a while, because I've got friends who have stopped having sex in their marriage and I'll say they are at peace with that. I would disagree. Mm. But I think also there's that thing, how do you have, if you have gone months without sex, how do you begin that?
The longer you leave it, the harder it is.
Yes.
Because it starts to become the elephant in the room. And rather than admit that there's this huge, big, grey animal coming between you, people just avoid the issue. And the only way to get past it is to sit down and say to each other, look, it's been ages. Do you want to have sex? I think we should. Even if we feel weird, even if it feels clumsy and awkward.
All lights out.
Yeah, let's just give it a go. And I think you have to just be straightforward with each other. I don't think there's any easy way beyond that. And once you clear the air, it suddenly becomes much easier.
Could you go to a sex therapist? Are they helpful?
Well, I mean, if you need one, one of the other issues to be aware of is certainly as men get older, there's all sorts of sexual problems and they're really bad at talking about them.
Yes.
And they're really bad at addressing them. And so instead of tackling the issue, they just stop having sex. And that's really, really unhelpful. And also, so many of the male problems are very, very easy to fix.
Solved, yes.
And
yeah.
Female issues are more difficult to fix.
Well, they won't go to the doctor either, so getting a man
No, absolutely not. And so that's why openness is the kind of number one priority. And people really struggle with that because, you know, no one ever teaches us how to talk about sex. I mean, no one ever teaches us how to have sex. But, you know, the fundamental root of all kind of intimacy is being able to be open with each other.
Are you finding a difference, Susie, in the kind of questions that you're, because you've been a sex agony aunt for a long time, and obviously the kind of questions you're getting now from, say, a younger generation of the audience to women our age, are you seeing a difference? I'm just thinking about Tinder generation, hookups, meetups, all of
sex
that.
Sex all the time, anybody,
fluid sexuality,
anonymous,
all of that kind of thing.
You know, I tend to get emails and I get letters from elderly people, but I get emails from people who have problems. So I don't get emails from people who are having tons and tons of sex, who are having a great time. And so it's a huge bias. And in terms of the stuff that I see, absolutely not. I mean, the level of ignorance in this day and age
is
absolutely shocking.
Yeah, still not taught at schools in the way it should be.
Yeah, I mean, I had an email this morning from somebody who obviously has English as a second language, who talked about how her partner, obviously very young, how her partner has sex with her for like an hour and a half before he comes, and how it's really uncomfortable and awkward and difficult
painful.
And I'm thinking, why don't you just say something? He obviously needs to go to the doctor. You know, he's got retarded ejaculation.
It is such a taboo, though, isn't it?
It's
still
so
that
difficult.
Last taboo that you can't now. So my teenage daughter, and she won't mind me talking about this, has a boyfriend who stays the night. And we've had very open... I mean, I used to edit Cosmo, so I learnt a lot about how to talk to young women about sex when I did that. We've had very open, honest conversations about sex, sexuality. But I know a lot of my friends who can't have that conversation with their sons or daughters. And I worry about how unhelpful that is for their young teenagers going out into the world, wondering what's right, what's wrong. There are books, there's websites, there's quite a lot of support actually around if you want the information.
The only thing I would say is that we have this assumption that because all that information is out there for young people, that they are able to access it, process it, and apply it to their own situation.
Interesting.
That's not the case. I mean, if you think about an English literature test at school where they're given a piece of comprehension and given 10 questions to answer to find the answers in the text that is straight in front of them, they find that quite challenging. Stick them in front of a computer with the World Wide Web and ask them, and also their problems tend to be personal to them and unique to a time point in their life or a relationship that they're having. It's very, very hard for them to take all that generic information and find a solution that maps onto their experience. So I think at a parental level, we really have a duty. We, you know, it's great that schools try and do sex education, but it's not standardised, and it's certainly not, you know, given
dependent
to everybody.
On the teacher.
Absolutely. So as parents, we do have a duty to educate our children, and parents who can't face it should just stick the right books in their kids' bedroom and make sure there's a box of condoms in the bathroom.
Did you see Sex Education on Netflix?
Yes. Oh, I loved it.
What did you think of that?
I loved it. Did you love it?
I loved it.
That's a good way to show teenagers.
I loved it. I thought it was great.
Basically about a teenagers, a sort of sixth form college, isn't it?
Yeah.
Where
In England.
And it's all about the kind of different sexual problems and experiences this kind of cohort have. And the fabulous Gillian Anderson plays a mother.
She's
a sex therapist.
But what was brilliant about Sex Education is they had the first ever intimacy coach, because they were nervous about the teenage actors and actresses having to be quite graphic in some of the scenes. And this woman coached them through various responses, did a lot of role play. And that's never really happened before, apparently, on kind of drama where there are young people having sex. And I think that's what made it different, because it felt really real. It felt that was the kind of sex teenagers might be having. I mean, it's in a sitcom-y type environment, but
I mean, actually,
I was quite proud of that. I thought it was a good thing to do.
And the fact that seems so radical shows you
ridiculous
how little sex education there is and how little openness there is about it.
And well, I'm just learnt the difference between vagina and vulva the other day, because I'm always saying to my 7-year-old, please use the word vagina, not front bottom. And then someone, a friend of mine, said to me, that's not her vagina, that's her vulva. And Mabel said, we've got a vulva. And I said, no, that's a Volvo. That's a Volvo. It's a different thing. You can't fit 7 people in my vulva. That's not the thing. Anyway, so Susie, so if you're a couple who've been married a while,
yeah,
and you want to revive your sex life, you're still having a sex life, what would be the way to move it forward? Because I think there is a second act in your sex life. You've been having the same kind of sex for a long time. When you met, it was amazing. There was a lot of anticipation and lust and everything. And then
you could get into some kind of quite interesting positions, which probably can't
hips
anymore.
Will not allow
hips.
Now.
No, exactly.
I think any couple that sort of makes a conscious decision to invest in their sex life, things are going to get better. But one thing I can reveal is that I had terrible problems with my husband, and we went in and did some counselling together, and it was incredible. It was like we went through this process, and because we were talking really intently about loads of stuff, our sex life just went through the roof.
And closer.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I do think that what happens is you take each other for granted, distance, you know, you just feel a bit distant from each other, and you lose that connection. But when you actually start to really focus on each other and focus on your relationship, and you take that into bed, it really changes everything. I mean, you can do all the, you know, the tricks, and you can get all the toys, but ultimately the most amazing sex is when you're totally intently focused on each other and the experience. And that only comes from, you know, deciding that you want to be with each other in every single sense of the word. Mm-hmm. There's no magic solution. And that's why sex is the first thing to go when a relationship is breaking down. And it is the hardest thing to get back.
To bring back. Mm,
but if you make the decision that you are together, this is who you are as a couple, it makes a kind of step change. And that will often happen at around this time of life, because this is a time when women are, you know, they're older, their kids are growing up, so they're starting to think about themselves in an autonomous way that they haven't before.
Not so much a mother.
You're not a mother, and you might decide at this time of life that you don't want to be a wife either. And sometimes you're not a daughter anymore as well, because you've got aging parents, or your parents are dying. So for women, it's a very, very critical time point. And it is the point in a woman's life where she will decide either I'm in or I'm out. And if she's in, she will go back in with a bang. And then that's why sex can become incredible.
Better.
Yeah.
You know, for some women, if you've been in a long-term relationship, maybe, and then you got divorced and getting back in the saddle.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of issues? I mean, it could be around body confidence, or what sort of things do you think?
The amazing thing about falling in love and falling in lust is that all those insecurities go away, because suddenly you're the centre of someone else's universe. And actually, that's the biggest confidence boost anyone
sexy.
Can have.
Makes you
it's
sexy.
Super, super sexy. And you can see it in people's faces. They literally glow when they're having lots of sex and they're really happy and elated. It's amazing.
But I've got friends who are divorced, and they sort of feel like, oh, I have to go on Tinder, I have to meet people. And it's almost like this idea now
pressure
that we have the
sex.
Pressure to kind of just hook up with somebody and have some sex rather than the point that you're making.
Well, I think that's a whole different ball game. I think a lot of people, when they come out of a relationship at this time of life, they will experiment with that because they've been off the market for a long time, and they want to feel, you know, what's it like to have to kiss a lot of frogs. But you know, it is a bit of a merry-go-round.
Yes,
you know, so
yeah.
So there is people out there, and when you do find the one, then it is really exciting.
Susie, thank you so much for joining us on this session. I think there were some very valuable insights there, and a lot of reassurance,
I think,
as well. So
yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Absolutely delightful. Thank you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Well, thank you very much, Susie Godson, for talking so openly and honestly about one of my favourite subjects, sex. Now, I was thinking about all of this in terms of my own two teenage daughters, one of whom is 17 and has had a boyfriend for a year. He's kind of become part of our lives, but I would say it's still quite tricky when I turn round and they're snogging in the kitchen.
No.
I know. It's a really funny, weird, mixed feeling, because I just think, I'm so glad someone's being really nice to her.
She's still precious and I love down her throat.
You always reduce it to some kind of, honestly.
Do you look away? What do you do? Do you just
Yes, you look away. What happens is my husband just goes into the garden or runs upstairs at 100 miles an hour like he's fleeing a fire or something like that. And then, you know, he stays overnight in our house. We've allowed that. We're happy about that. It's just a weird thing when you see, I still see her as a really little girl, and her little plaits, and you know, her old teddies are still on her bed, and you know, there she is snogging this 6'2".
Yeah, but they're going to do it, so you know, they're going to do it anyway, aren't
don't
they?
Don't have to be happy about it, Trish.
You know, you don't have to be happy about it. But I think if they're ready to have sex, if they're going to be snogging, they're going to be doing it.
How do you advise your? What happens with yours? Because you've got a girl and a boy, both 16.
A little bit younger, so they haven't quite got to. They're 15 at the moment, nearly 16, and I think there's sort of a bit of flirting and a bit of dating, and I'm sure there possibly has been some snogging going on, but I don't think much more than that. And it hasn't.
I think more than that.
Yeah, probably more than that.
Did you kneel down and have a little chat with him about what's going to happen?
Do you know, we haven't had the conversation yet. It's almost like we're fearful of having it, because it's almost like if we have it, it's going to start happening. But I suppose I probably need to. I think he'll be a bit sort of like, like a bit like you described, James, wanting to run away from it all.
We sat and had a chat, and then I just thought, well, he's not been a teenage girl, and I felt because I've been a teenage girl, I might be a little bit more qualified for.
But I haven't got to the point, and it's a good thing to discuss the idea of, you know, do you let them sleep with their boyfriend or girlfriend?
Depends on and then personality.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that in places like Holland, where they have family harmony is such an important part of family life, they have much lower rates of teen pregnancies, and they do, say, for example, in the US, where teen sex is just really feared and forbidden. So that kind of practical, pragmatic social stuff, along with your own personal values and kind of what's important to you. Was it hard for you to make that decision?
Well, do you know what? I think it was very easy because he's such a nice boy. And we spoke to his parents about it because I wanted it to be agreed between all of us. I mean, I guess if your daughter's bringing, I don't know, someone like Keith Richards home or something like that.
Or some old rocker granddad.
Off his head and 75 years old. Yeah. Then you're going to say, I don't think it's a reasonable thing to agree to. We said no many times before we said yes. I would say for about 3 months we said we don't think we're not ready yet. There's that whole thing, really, that thing around consent. Do boys understand that? Do they understand what real women look like, because there's so much of that awful porn available where women are looking a very different way and they're very submissive. All of that was going through my head, but in the end I just had to pare it all back to how happy are they together as a couple. You know, it doesn't mean that I'm happily clapping saying woohoo, she's a woman at last.
Can you imagine if it was, as you say, not necessarily Keith Richards, but somebody
didn't like that,
that you didn't like, and then I think the thing there is, isn't it, that you just can't be critical or judgmental about them in any kind of way.
Control your teenagers.
You can't control them, but you also need to make sure that they're not being controlled in a relationship.
That they have all the facts.
Yeah. You've written about this a lot in your years at Cosmo, and I did back in the day on More Magazine. Remember that one? And
position of the month.
Position of the fortnight. Fortnight. Yeah. It's almost like the same rules that you would apply to sort of dating as a grown-up needs to apply to them. Not the rules, but the guidelines that we were writing about. Things like find somebody that they feel comfortable with, that they can be themselves with. You know, keeping a social life, because there can be that thing where they start dating
intense.
Love someone and then they forget everything else in their life. You'd never do that as a grown-up, so it's important that they start learning these things as they start dating as well.
But I was a bit jealous as well, Trish.
Oh, jealous?
Yeah, because they're in love and it's like their first mad, passionate love affair. When he goes out the door, she's literally counting the seconds till she sees him again. That's not the same as
but
me and Mr. Candy.
She's cracking on with Mr. Candy. It's for any
Neil?
Of us, really.
I worry about Neil.
No. But, you know, a different kind of
but
love.
But it's not as exciting, Trish.
No, it's not.
No. So we're nearing the end of our first podcast now, but before we leave you, there are a few fun things we want to tell you all about, and we're going to do this every week.
What we're going to be doing is talking about something that's changing our world this week, something new that we've been trying, and doing a little bit of nostalgia noodling, a little trip down memory lane, maybe to the 70s, 80s or 90s.
Tell me what has changed in your life this week.
Well, I've got a bit of a girl crush on somebody that I met. She's a model called Noella Kuses Musunka, and she is obviously gorgeous, but she's just the most incredible woman. She's one of those women who just gets you to do stuff.
Grown-up model.
She's a philanthropist as well, and she has an organisation called Malaika, which she's from the Democratic Republic of Congo, and she has started a girls' school and a foundation to support girls, and she just gets people doing good things. She introduces you to people, she asks you to get involved with charity initiatives, and she's just a wonderful human being. So that she's changed my life.
Google her.
Google her, please. Now, what I'm trying, I like a bit of walking, got the dog, do a bit of walking, and I've always been really rubbish at sort of navigating around places. I'll just sort of bit pathetic, just leave it to my husband to get the map out.
Well, you haven't
got
a sense of direction, have you, Trish?
Going round
in circles. I've been with you on occasions. In fact, going from here to the loo would
be... Oh, I know, that was fun, wasn't it? But there's a website that I'm rather loving called Fancy Free Walks, which just gives you really nice... There's people who go out walking and then you get literally idiot-proof directions, and even I can navigate the walks now with that. It's a bit middle-aged and boring, but it's really nice.
Have you started gardening as well?
Yeah. No. Never. We always do a bit of nostalgia. We call it nostalgia noodling, don't we? And given the very sad demise of my beloved Marie Claire, I was thinking the other day about another magazine's demise, and that was Jackie magazine.
Oh, gosh. We all
loved Jackie magazine, didn't we? And do you remember Kathy and Claire, the agony aunts?
There must be some in the loft in my parents'
house. Oh, I'm sure there is.
For God's sake.
Yeah, and you can see, you can sort of search them up on Tinternet, which is brilliant. But I was just having a think about them and thinking about, I sort of feel a bit sad, really, that my daughter doesn't have...
They don't care, do they, teenage girls? They don't want to look at magazines.
I think they probably quite like it. Do you remember like Patches and Blue Jeans and those photo
Just
love
17.
Stories and all of those?
Yeah.
Really good.
Well, when I first worked on a local paper, when I was work experience for the summer during my 16th year on the Cornish Times, but it was in a newsagent's. So at lunchtime, I would just read them all. They were all brilliant.
Read them all for free.
Didn't have to pay
27 pence.
Pop them back, tried not to get my lunch on the edges so people could still buy them.
Oh. And what about you, Lorraine? What's been changing your life this week?
A lot of fashion in my world, as you can imagine, editor of Sunday Times Style. I used to edit Elle. But I was just remembering something a fashion director taught me about, because I'm not going to buy any new things. I'm really trying not to spend money on things I don't need, because it's not good for the environment and it's feeding this unsustainable industry in many ways. So I've started to look at the clothes rotation.
Oh.
Yeah, this is quite scientific. So you hang your clothes in outfits, and what you do is for 6 weeks you have those outfits set that saves you so much time in the morning. In the two suitcases you've got for your summer holidays, in those you put everything else you're not wearing, and you've got to be ruthless, you've got to put everything you're not wearing in those. And then you rotate them. So about every 6 weeks, you then go back in, change all your outfits up a bit, and then hang another set of outfits up. And it feels
Does
like you bought
like
new
got,
clothes.
But it sounds like you've got a lot of clothes to do that.
Well, I
have yeah, got a lot of clothes. Yeah, a lot of pink,
of
pink
got
jackets.
Lot of
Lovely pink jackets.
And the other thing I'm doing is I'm reading, I think it's an advanced copy of Clover Stroud's book, My Wild and Sleepless Nights. And she's the mother of five. She moved out of London to have a happier life in the country. But it's a very, very honest account of motherhood and birth and the women you meet. And also because her children go from naught to teenage, she just tells it like it is. And it's their story. It's really brilliant, actually. I've been reading it on the tube on the way in. And my nostalgia noodling this week is... caught a whiff of the perfume Poison.
Oh my goodness.
Do you remember Poison?
Yes.
In its purple bottle.
Yes. So that was your favourite, was it?
That one and the Moogler one. I can't remember its name.
It's Angel. No.
Angel. That's
Angel.
It. Which is still going.
Yeah.
My grandma used to wear number five.
Oh, lovely.
Number five.
Yeah. Yeah.
You like the...
I like the number fives. There's a range of them. But my first one was, I hope I'm going to say it properly, I'm remembering an advert, Anais.
Ooh,
do you remember that one?
That was nice.
Quite floral, quite nice. And then I think I kind of got a bit more sophisticated and moved on to Rive Gauche.
you know, the general.
I like the CK one, the first ever.
Oh, yeah, that was so glamorous.
Well, when I say whiff, I mean, you could probably smell it.
It knocked you over.
Yeah.
It was quite strong, wasn't it?
Now, as you know, we've been speaking to some wonderful women about their experiences of midlife, but we'd like to hear yours too.
Was your menopause a doddle or diabolical? And how are your teens acting out? We want to hear the good, the bad, the ugly.
We'd love you to send us a postcard with all of this information on. We'll put the address in the description of each episode, and we're going to read out our favourite stories in a bonus episode at the end of this series.
I hope you've enjoyed Postcards from Midlife this week. Next time, we're going to be talking to Danusha Melina Durbin. She's a mother of 10, and we're going to be asking her about managing a large family and getting where you want in your career. Until then, bye! Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.